strive for happiness. Maybe you should just strive. That is the crux of Dr. Adam Fraser's work in this area. Now, he is a peak performance researcher and a researcher in biomedical science. And he's written a book called Strive that's out this week. And he joins us now. Hello. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Now, you've been working on this research for the last 10 years, but you managed to blow your own mind with it. How did you blow your own mind?
Yeah, well, our research has been looking at transformation. Like if you think about business, it's evolving, so people have to evolve with it. And we've been studying that. But we came up with two findings that just kind of messed with our head. And then normally in research, you have a hypothesis and you start with that. This was, we found something and we just went, how the hell do we make sense of this? And that's what the book's all about and the research.
Mm-hmm. And that is what Strive is all about. All right, let's talk about the research then. What did you do?
Well, the first thing is we looked at transformation or goal achievement, and people thought that the most fulfilling, enjoyable part of the goal is the achievement, like get to the end. But what we found in our research is it's actually the strive. So when we achieve the goal, we feel great for a moment and then we have a flat spot. So we found this with everyone. People that sold their business for millions of dollars, gold medalists coming back from the Olympics, you name it. And
what about ordinary people like me who just aim to,
get
through the day?
Not sure about you.
Yeah, okay. No, but it is that we always told it's good to have a goal and then you'll be happy when you achieve
but
it.
But even ordinary people who, like, say you wanted to run a marathon or get a job promotion, same deal. And what people enjoy is the strive, which is working towards the goal. And as soon as we achieve the goal, we're kind of looking for the next strive. So that was the first thing. And then when we started to explore the strive, what came out is that the most fulfilling part is the part that has the most amount of struggle and discomfort associated with
it. The bit we don't like doing along the way.
Like getting in the trench. We like the trenches more than we like the podium. Mm. So, yeah, that's what that was the finding that made us think, what the hell?
Well, in some ways that's not surprising because, you know, some say, I suppose a lot of kind of inner wisdom sometimes says it's the journey, not the destination, you know, that kind of thing, that when we are actually really focused and we have purpose, we feel good. So it's not about achievement, it's about purpose. So we do get these mixed messages though, because then we also got told, you've got to be happy. Why aren't you happy? Put on a smile.
Yeah. And one of the things that stops striving or the ability to have a functional relationship with struggle is the happiness movement, because we're told we should feel good. And if you boil all that sort of positive psychology, happiness movement, yeah, it's been interpreted as positive emotion is good and good for you and negative emotion is bad and bad for you and you should feel good. But the problem with struggle and discomfort is it feels bad. So most people, the moment they hit that, go, well, this is not good, and then they retreat and it stops them evolving and growing.
So what should they do? What have you found that is better?
Well, the whole thing about having a more functional relationship with struggle is, number one, you got to see it as an opportunity to develop. So rather than that knee-jerk reaction of, I've got to get away from this thing, it's seeing it as that's the part we need to really lean into and see it as an opportunity to grow and evolve. And the beautiful thing about struggle is it allows us to be courageous and to progress. And they are two things that our research showed human beings need. We crave courage or to be courageous, and we crave evolution. So
should we set goals and then constantly struggle and strive towards them? Is that, or should we not just have such hard and fast goals?
Well,
I suppose you need the goal to have the struggle sometimes, don't you?
Yeah. What we showed is people do need that constant state of striving. And I know it sounds exhausting, and part of me goes,
I'm waiting to the point where I don't have to strive.
Well, yeah, part of me hoped that our research showed that the key to happiness was beer and pizza, but it's not.
And on a Friday afternoon, right?
After you get through a long day. Mm. But the even people that retire kind of go, well, I've worked my butt off for so many years and now I'm going to enjoy myself. And retirement is devastating
for most
people. You
say don't retire in this book.
Well, Yeah. Well, if you do retire, make sure you continue to strive and evolve and have struggle.
In other ways. Yeah, yeah. There's other aims you can have that don't center around your job, aren't there?
Exactly.
It doesn't always have to come from jobs, that striving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really comes back to our relationship with struggle as seeing it, because we have this seeking mechanism within us that we want to continually evolve.
Mm-hmm. You're on ABC Radio Evenings. Dr. Adam Fraser is with us. He's a researcher in biomedical science. I want to just go back and off the strive issue for a second, because you actually went to Kuwait. I want to hear about this phone call you got from Kuwait. How long ago was this and what happened?
Oh, gosh, it'd probably be about 8 years ago. And I'd spoken at the Dalai Lama conference. Little did I know, the Princess of Kuwait, Sheikha Intisar, was in the audience. And then a few weeks later, she called me and said, you know, I want you to come to Kuwait and help us make the country happier, which, like any normal person, would think that's a prank call from my friends who often do that. And I was, you know, demanding rubies and camels and...
Yeah, you were going along with your friends pranking you.
Well, I thought I was actually ahead of the joke and you know, then I had one over them, but it turned out to be very true. So for the next 4 years, traveled to Kuwait to work on this project, and which, number one, is just... Oh, beautiful people, and I've properly fallen in love with them, and I miss them terribly. But part of it was that they're a very wealthy country, but a very small country. So there's only a million to a million and a half Kuwaiti nationals. So they're a very generous government, and so the level of struggle and strive was quite low. And so part of, and Al Nawair is the organization that Sheikha runs, focused on, well, how do we make Kuwait a more prosperous society? And part of it was, we need them to strive and struggle more. So,
right, because
yeah.
But they were victims of their prosperity because
exactly.
It had made them too comfortable and adverse to being, to struggling.
Yeah.
That was making them unhappy.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. They were victims of generosity and a lack of discomfort. Mm.
But at the same time, we want for our citizens, people to not struggle and be poor and to live in poverty, right? Like, I don't believe that, you know, poor people are happy people. So how did you balance that with what they were striving to do?
Well, what it was, a couple of things we focused on. One of them was just raising awareness about the importance of challenge and evolution and growth. And the other one was to really focus on young people looking at entrepreneurism and, you know, having meaning and purpose attached to what they were doing and try to make an impact rather than follow this sort of cruisy path that many of them had.
Mm.
Yeah.
You mentioned young people in the book, and it's an interesting one because the buzzword now in parenting is you want your kids to be resilient. So don't just try and make them happy little Vegemites. They've got to be resilient and they've got to be a bit tougher. And this is in recognition that sometimes people worry their kids are too soft, that they get medals for just showing up. So where do you go with this argument? What more do we need to do as we raise kids to teach them about the power of the struggle and the striving?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. And when we explored it, every generation looks at the next generation and goes, wow, in my day, I had it so much harder. And
when I was young, we were so poor, yeah.
It's like that Monty Python
That's
skit,
right,
luxury.
Exactly.
But I don't think that is true. I look at kids today and go, far out, you got so many challenges.
They do.
And so it's not that they have it easier. The big thing they face is that because of the happiness movement and all those sorts of things, they're told and parents believe that struggle and discomfort is bad. Like, you got to protect your kid from that.
And it hurts when you see your kid struggling.
Yeah. But like, our parents kind of went, suck it up. Whereas we go, and it almost went from, you know, that kind of hardened parenting to stack hat parenting, which is, how do I protect them physically, to now it's, how do I protect them emotionally? And what kids today are suffering from is a dysfunctional relationship with struggle, where they go, well, that's bad, and it's supposed to feel good, and it's supposed to be easy. And if it's not, there's something wrong with the situation or something wrong with me. So we've got to allow our kids to sit in struggle more. And we're not talking trauma or awful things, but just in discomfort.
Okay, so you've got an exam. I know you hate studying. We should just say, suck it up.
Well, okay. And this is very important.
There's parents listening to this show. Yeah. My daughter's doing her HSC this year.
Definitely don't say suck it up. And part of the book looks at, well, if you're a leader or if you exist in a team in the workplace, how do you have a culture that enables struggle but in a supportive way? And one of the best things leaders can do is the validation and empathize of, you know, rather than if someone comes to you and goes, I'm overwhelmed, I'm freaking out, I don't know what to do, rather than going, well, suck it up or enjoy the struggle, it's I totally get that. And I can, and talk to me about that. And what are you struggling with and how do you feel? And empathize going, yeah, you know what, when I get overwhelmed, yeah, I often think I don't know what to attack next. So it's validating the struggle and the fact that it does suck, but then going, how can I help? Or what's the next thing you could focus on? So that what our research showed is that, and this is a key thing about struggle, is that when you validate your own response or someone validates your response, it allows you to move into action faster. So you have a more constructive response. Because if you go, I'm not coping, and someone says, oh, it's not that bad, get on with it.
Yeah.
You're not only dealing with the situation, but also the shame of, God, why can't I handle it? Or why do I have that reaction? That's a bad reaction. Whereas the validation allows us to move on to, here's how you...
So
you
don't feel shame in your own struggle. Kind of. It's what we say to our kids and ourselves. Sit within that, because within that is the goal that we'll remember as being good.
Yeah. And also, whatever your reaction, it's the acceptance of that is critical. So you might be doing a presentation and you might be freaking out. And rather than going, oh my gosh, why am I freaking out? I've got to be more confident. It's like, well, I'm about to do a presentation and my response is I'm freaking out, and that's okay. But what do I want to focus on in the presentation, or what can I do right now to calm myself? So that is critical.
Yeah. And this sort of also explains why people who inherit a lot of money, rich kids, are often complete messes. And you've found this in your experience over different aspects of your life and times in your life.
I'm so glad you asked that question. A couple of interesting things about that. Number one, the acceptance piece. We found some research that showed privileged children who have quite high suicide rates in comparison, because my life's awesome on paper, but I say to someone, you know, I'm just not happy, or I feel unfulfilled. The most common response I get is, what do you got to worry about? Like, shut up. You know, you
suck
got
it up,
this.
Princess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so that just, and after a while, if they get shamed every time they express dissatisfaction, they stop sharing. And obviously that is detrimental, but the whole rich kids piece. One of the groups we interviewed were trust lawyers, so people that look after billion-dollar family trusts. And one of the lawyers, who was very experienced, he said, the only difference between really rich kids and welfare kids is how expensive the drugs are they take.
Really?
And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, both groups have low expectation and low struggle. And even though the welfare
and take
kids...
drugs.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
well,
yeah, I mean, not always, but
it's the lack of strive that leads to that.
Right.
So, you know, the really wealthy kids that are given everything have low expectation on them, but the welfare kids also have low expectation. And while their context is very different, it's the same. It's the lack of struggle and meaning and purpose and striving that puts them into that. Mm. So, it's almost easy sucks. If it's too easy for you, it's dysfunctional.
Mm. And maybe this explains also why people win the lottery and then are dissatisfied.
Yes, right? Very much.
Yeah. And beautiful people who are given everything on a platter because they're so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Often really, really,
I mean,
unhappy.
That's something we didn't look at and something I don't have to deal with in my life. But,
but I always say that to my kids, like, being famous is the worst thing in a way, because everyone hands you everything. Yeah, you don't. Yeah. You know, they lose themselves almost. Yeah. Mm. So in terms of this work that you've done, and the avoiding of discomfort and how we shouldn't be seeking happiness, how does this kind of go with Buddhism and the Dalai Lama and the princess of Kuwait who said, come over because my people aren't happy. What? Because Buddhism talks about happiness as well. What perhaps should we be talking about instead? Or does striving make us happy, even though we shouldn't be searching for happiness? I'm going around in a circle, Adam.
I think the conversation has to shift away from happiness to fulfillment. And am I fulfilled? But also put striving in there. Am I striving? Is there something I'm working towards? Am I trying to evolve? And striving doesn't necessarily... Actually, another interesting group I interview were people in Bhutan, which is all about...
Yes, they have a happiness like measurement,
gross national
don't
happiness.
They? Gross national happiness.
And I was trying to be provocative and I said to them, look, that makes me feel like you're just kind of in cruise mode and you're not striving. And they said, no, striving is a huge part of our culture, but we strive to be better citizens. We strive to give back to the environment. We strive to have a cohesive family. He said, striving is not about, you know, capitalism or, you know, I have to achieve this or being better than someone else. It's just about evolution.
I think if you can strive to be a better person, it's the best striving of all, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because that's a really worthy goal.
Yeah.
And we all struggle with that because we all sometimes do the wrong thing and we're hard on ourselves.
Parents.
Yeah. So you've been to Bhutan, you've been to Kuwait, and you've looked at Australia. What culturally do you find different about Australians and the sort of search for purpose, meaning and happiness and how we deal with struggle? Is there anything you can say, or is it that just too much of a stereotype or a generalization?
Oh, that's such a great question. It's not one I've been asked before. And, you know, as a scientist...
I strive to be.
Yeah, you're putting me in struggle right now. as a scientist, I always like to have some sort of concrete thing behind it. I don't know whether I could answer that with any good conscience of knowing what I'm talking about rather than just appearing to know what I'm talking about.
Well, fair enough.
I mean, yeah, we obviously have our tall poppy syndrome thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you do find at the moment in Australia, we've just been through an enormous amount of struggle. Oh, not gosh. All of us, right? Yeah. But so many people on the South Coast, northern New South Wales, you know, terrible fires in Canberra. We're really worried right now. We are struggling.
Yeah.
We're in an uncomfortable position and we're upset and sad about that. So what do we take from your work and strive into this place we're in right now?
Actually, that's a beautiful question. One thing we found in our research is there's four main types of struggle. There's traumatic struggle, and that's
you
lose it. That's where we're at. And so true trauma. Then we have sorrowful struggle where something sad happens to us. I lose my job or, you know, a person I care about dies. We also have struggle in the dredge, which is the day-to-day crap. You know, my kids wouldn't get dressed this morning, so I was late. That's that struggle. And then we have growth-centric struggle. And that is what the book talks about. It's the struggle that allows us to evolve and grow and be courageous. So today I had to have a hard conversation with someone. That was an opportunity. That was definitely struggle, but it was an opportunity to grow and evolve and step up. Mm. So we're not talking... Look, there is a lot of research that show out of trauma and out of sorrow comes evolution. But, you know, that's not the focus of the book. And certainly we're not... telling people to go through horrible experiences. What we're telling people is that seek out more opportunities to have growth-centric struggle, which is the stuff we don't really want to do, but if we step into it, we evolve.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose around the fires, the one thing that has shone through, I think, the shoots of hope has been when people have just got together and done great things. You know, we had someone offer a drum kit for a kid who lost their drum kit in the fires on the show, and a surfboard, and people going and helping and people doing the best they can, taking the hay bales to areas of drought. That is where people find some relief through the struggle and in that purpose within it as well. But I take your point. You're talking about that personal struggle we have.
Yeah.
Don't search for happiness. Sit in the struggle and work with it.
And you talk about Australians before. One thing we're really good at doing is supporting each other. And, Yeah, that's one of the beautiful things about our culture.
Mm. All right. Next time you take a call from a princess, don't ask for rubies and camels.
I've learnt my lesson.
Who are your friends?
Oh, they're horrible.
The book is called Strive. It's by Dr. Adam Fraser, and it's out now. Thanks for your time tonight.
My pleasure.